This week, I'm speaking with Tammy Guler-Loeb, author of Work from the Inside Out, Breakthrough 9 Common Obstacles and Design a Career That Fulfills You, and who is also the podcast host of the Work from the Inside Out podcast. Cue the music.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made 6 career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 264 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. This week, I'm speaking with Tammy Guler-Loeb, author of Work from the Inside Out, Breakthrough 9 Common Obstacles and Design a Career That Fulfills You, and who's also the podcast host of the Work from the Inside Out podcast. I had Tammy on the podcast way back in June of 2020 in episode 182, and that episode was called Networking and Remote Work in the COVID-19 World with Tammy Guler-Loeb. Let me read you the About section on Amazon about Tammy Guler-Loeb. Tammy Guler-Loeb, MBA, CPCC, is a career and executive coach who helps people pursue meaningful and fulfilling work. In addition to coaching individuals, Tammy consults and speaks on career satisfaction, leadership development, effective workplace communication, and networking strategies. Tammy has enjoyed working with clients and companies across many industries over 2 decades. Tammy also hosts a weekly podcast, Work from the Inside Out, where she shares the inspiring stories and informative lessons of people who've made professional transitions to more satisfying and fulfilling work. Her expertise has been featured in the Harvard Business Review Ascend, Forbes Fast Company, and the Boston Globe. There were several chapters in her book that I thought were especially relevant to my audience as we exit the pandemic. So that's why I have Tammy on the show. However, before we get to the episode, let's have a word from our sponsor, Career Pivot. The Career Pivot membership community continues to help the members who are participating in this project grow and thrive. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else figure out what they want to do in the second half of life and then make it happen. Let's hear what Vicky had to say about being part of the community.
For me, I would say it's the resources that you've made available to the community, whether it's bringing on speakers who have insights into the current hiring and job searching trends, especially during the pandemic. This has been so useful. Highlighting companies that are providing remote work for older adults. And again, this is how I was able to get my current part-time job, but also helping me to see new possibilities about what work might look like now and in the immediate future, because you know, this is so important. The traditional jobs that our generation was raised with have essentially evaporated. And so that's really what's been most helpful to me most recently.
I'm recruiting new members to the next group. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor, please go to careerpivot.com/community. Now, on to my discussion with Tammy Guler-Loeb. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have the real joy of having Tammy Guler-Loeb on the podcast, and she is the author of Work from the Inside Out, which published in January of this year, and she is the producer of the podcast Work from the Inside Out. Welcome to the podcast, Tammy.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is the second time I've had you on the podcast.
Yes. And I'm happy to be here for a second time.
You sent me a copy of your book. And yes, I read most of it. And what I thought we could do is you and I are on the mostly on the same page.
Mostly.
Well, 99%.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you know. No one's exactly like me because I'm special.
Well, you are. I agree.
So I want to start out your first couple of chapters. The first one is fear, friend, or foe.
Yes.
And fear is something I know a lot in our audience have a lot of these days, particularly coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And which will come into your last chapter, which is uncertainty is a fact of life. But we'll get to that later. So you talk about fear. Talk about what you mean by fear.
Sure. Fear is the first chapter. It actually runs through the whole book. Not to sound too negative. And that's why I call it friend or foe. Because fear plays a number of roles in our life. It's a natural phenomenon in our lives. It both protects us, but it also can energize us. So, you know, in terms of thinking about making changes in our lives or going after something we want in our lives, thinking about the kinds of things we might want in our lives, whether we're going after our next phase or our next step, whatever it is we want, we often will reflect on past experiences, positive or negative. And sometimes we might be afraid of repeating a past mistake or repeating a negative experience. That brings about fear. That will bring about certain feelings that we don't want to repeat again or experiences we don't want to repeat again. So we're afraid to go through that experience again. And so we have that protective feeling of fear. However, sometimes we'll discover something that intrigues us, that gives us that little bit of energized, jittery feeling. You know, it's like, ooh, that sounds intriguing. That actually gets me a little excited. I think that would be really cool to look at that a little more closely. That's also a little bit of fear and excitement, because fear can feel like excitement. And that's where it can be your friend, because it can be a clue. It can be giving you that signal, oh, this is something that your instincts or your intuition are telling you something, that even though it might feel like fear, like it's almost like that, ooh, that's almost too good to be, it's almost scary, it's so good. And so I suggest that people just pay attention to that little jittery, fearful feeling, because that might actually be a clue that that's something worthy of looking, taking a closer look at. I'm not suggesting that you go in with both feet and close your eyes and jump. I'm just saying pay attention to those feelings, because that's the side of fear that can actually get you to a place you might really want to go, and you might be really glad you looked there.
Yeah, the one thing I find is when people notice those feelings,
yeah,
but then don't act on them.
Right. Yes. And sometimes they regret it later that they didn't. And I always suggest at least take a look, take a close look, maybe talk to a few other people about it. Talk to people who know you well, talk to people who don't know you as well, or talk to maybe somebody who's gone there. Find out what their experience was like. Dip a toe in the water. Don't jump in with both feet. You know, there's lots of ways to test the waters before you, you know, if you really are feeling hesitant. I think there's lots of different ways to engage with it, but trust that feeling. It's telling you something, that there's something there for you that could really be rewarding. So don't let your fear get the best of you and prevent you from getting into something that could actually be a really rewarding and engaging experience. It may be that you get closer to it and you find out, you know what? No, that isn't really the right thing. Or you get closer to it and you discover, you know what? I'm close enough to it now that I realized, yeah, this is exciting, but I want a variation on that. But you would never find that out unless you get a little closer to it.
Yeah, you have the story of Chip Massey.
Yes, Chip.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Chip ended up becoming an FBI agent after being in the ministry.
Yes.
And what I thought was interesting was, and this is an important, this is a very important piece, he talked to current and former FBI agents.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Because what I find a lot of people do is they suffer, people have probably heard me say this, they suffer from MSU or make stuff up disorder.
Oh, yes.
They think they know what it's really like, but they really don't.
No.
And of which talking to people who have walked the talk and have actually done it is really key.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's critical.
It's critical to do that and to know how to ask the right kinds of questions about it, you know, and I think that's part of what I try to offer in the book are reflective questions. Take a look inside yourself. Take a look inside somebody else's experience. You know, sometimes I even suggest, I think I quote somewhere along the way, I quote Dale Carnegie and say, be interested, not interesting. You know, find yourself, put yourself in the other person's shoes and just embrace the other person's experience of something. The other reason why I actually pulled from Chip's experience was because part of his experience as an FBI agent and actually as a minister is that a big part of his work in both of those disciplines, he was constantly engaging with people around fear. And the work that he does today, he helps executives face their fears and deal with, because fear drives a lot of things that we do. And so he's still dealing with fear from a different vantage point now because he's retired as an FBI agent. But I wanted to draw from his experience because there were so many different ways in which he has engaged with fear in his life and in the work that he does now. And he really has unpacked it and learned how to engage with it all the way from, you know, dealing with people who had all kinds of things going on in their lives when he was a minister to talking someone off the street, a fugitive who he had to bring in and try to get them to come in off the street. So those people were very afraid. They didn't want to be locked up, but he had to get them in so they wouldn't do more damage. So there's all kinds of ways of encountering that. But if you can kind of just look at it almost from a bird's eye view like that, you start to objectify it a little more and you can kind of put it in its place, and then it doesn't immobilize you as much.
Right now, fear is a big deal in the fact that as we come out of the pandemic, and those of us who are a little bit older, and we have isolated for a long time, is, okay, what am I going to do when I'm got to be in a crowd? Or, right? I'm speaking at a conference next month where I'm going to have 500 people in the room. And I've been joking how I'm going to handle it, both my own anxiety.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use a lot of humor.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to have everyone wave their hands so I can take a picture so that I know they're not cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
So fear is a big deal. And just willing to admit that you have it. So your next chapter, it's never too late.
I love that.
And so tell me about what you mean by never too late.
Well, I encounter a lot of people who will tell me it's too late. I can't, you know, people who come to me for coaching, for example, who will say, I really don't like what I'm doing, or, you know, I feel like it's too late. Nobody wants to hire me. You know, there's a lot of ageism out there, and I don't argue with people about that. Absolutely, there is. And I will tell you that I helped a 70-year-old woman get a full-time job. So what I try to do in the book, and not just in the book, in my everyday life as a coach, is help people find what's possible. And I will say it's possible. I helped a 70-year-old woman get a job. The stories in the book include three people, all of whom I've known, who all found brand new careers at different stages of their lives. One was in her 40s, another in her 50s, and another gentleman who was in his late 50s, who all found new careers, all with different motivations. And so the point here being is it's only too late if you believe it's too late. That's the self-fulfilling prophecy. And there's lots of different pathways to finding your what's next. What I find is that a lot of people, when they reach a certain point, and it could be as young as their early 40s even, I've heard people say this to me, oh, it's too late to go back to school, or it's too expensive, or there's always a reason or an excuse why they're not going to take the next step. And really, they just, again, they have that syndrome. What's the syndrome?
MSU.
MSU.
Make stuff
they've
up.
Made all kinds of stuff up about what is it going to take for them to get to where they think they want to go. And the fact is there's many pathways to get there, and they're not opening all the doors. So that's the key here.
Quick interruption. If you are enjoying this podcast, please rate it and review it on whatever podcast player you are using. And more importantly, would you mind telling a friend? Thanks, and back to the podcast episode. I think one of the key things now is you have to re-look at the model of what work looks like.
Yes.
You know, I've had any number of people, well, I need to go back to work for a big company. And the answer is why? Because that's all they've really ever known.
Right. They don't. Right. So again, they're making things up. Right. Or let's say they really do want to change careers, or they want a different skill set. So there's an assumption that they have to go back to school and pay some kind of crazy tuition, when in fact, there are many options for gaining the skills or the knowledge you need. Or it's too late. I don't want to spend all that time in school. And I would say, okay, well, that's a choice you're making then. Don't say that someone's preventing you from doing that, because if you really wanted to do that, you have to put in the time. That's a choice. So, you know, there's a difference between, you know, saying something as if someone's tying your hands behind your back, right? Versus, do you want to put in the time or don't you? You know, the process of learning new things for a lot of people is actually very motivating and very enjoyable. So nobody really moves from one thing to another overnight. You know, it looks like all these other people who've found their next thing did it overnight. But what I show in the book, especially, is most of the stories I tell in the book, there are 22 stories in the book. If you really take a close look at those stories, most of those people spent several years finding their way from point A to point Z. It wasn't point A to point B and they were done. And I say several years. For some of them, it was just a few years. And for some of them, it was a few more years. But they enjoyed the process of getting there, too. And I find that most people who are trying to make some sort of a transition, there are lots of ways to do it in a very enjoyable and rewarding fashion. And people admire that, too. I think that if you have the right support and community around you, you're not doing it in a vacuum. You're doing it in a way that other people around you are encouraging you, and you'll find that there are other people going to be watching you and saying, I'd like to do what they're doing. I think what you're doing is terrific. So it's never too late to do anything. I mean, we see, turn on the news some nights and you see the 90-year-old who just got their college degree. You know, doesn't that leave you feeling good? Well, who says we can ever stop learning?
Yeah, I want you to go back and listen for my audience. I want you to go back and listen to the episode with Vicki Saul and Debbie Schnurr, who've been on the podcast in the last 6 weeks. Both of them were members of my online community, my membership community, and both of them took a variety of steps. Some didn't work out so well, but they were always willing to move forward. And the one key piece with Debbie, and Debbie went from being a mechanical engineer, and she's now a master gardener, working for the University of California Extension System as a part-time coordinator and working in a school system for 3 days a week as a consultant. Every step she took, she managed to connect to the next dot. Mm-hmm. And each time she connected it, she didn't know where the next dot would be.
Mm-hmm.
But she was open to that serendipity.
I love it.
And both of them have been real surprised at how people tell them how they have been inspirations to others.
Love it.
Right?
It's great.
But you're willing to go off and listen to what you want. Takes me back to one of your other chapters.
Yeah.
Careers are not formed in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the class example. My career has looked like a zigzag.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Gary O'Neill on the podcast several years ago. Gary's a recruiter out of Austin, talking about the fact that everyone is expecting their careers to supposedly have this nice upward projection, and it's right. Nice and even and flowing. And
yeah,
and
that's reality. What we were told, right? We were told you go, you graduate high school, you go to college, you study something, and then you graduate, you get a job, and then you climb some sort of ladder and you retire and you're all set.
Yep. And which goes with your next chapter, which is don't default to what you're good at. So
yes.
Tell me about what you mean by that, because
I love that one.
Right. Yeah.
So think about this. I don't know if this happened to you, Mark, but I know a lot of people grew up with either well-intentioned parents, grandparents, or teachers, adults in their lives who said, "You are really good at this. You should become a thus and such. You're really good at math, or you're really good at science, or you're really good at writing, and you should do this or that." And so you went and you studied, math in college, and you became, an actuary or an accountant or an engineer, whatever. And then you, started on that career path and you turned, 40, 42, you have a family, you have a good salary, you're on a good path, you're on that linear path, right? And you wake up one morning and you say, "I hate every minute of this. I did what I'm good at, but I hate it. Or I really don't like it, but I did what I was told I was good at." So the example that I often will share with people is I'll say, "Well, I'm really good at house cleaning. I'm a really good cleaner, but you know what? I do not enjoy it. I really don't enjoy cleaning." I usually use toilet cleaning as my example because I don't know a lot of people who enjoy cleaning toilets, but I'm sure there's someone out there who does, and I'm grateful to them. Nothing wrong with people who enjoy cleaning. I know people who do. I'm glad, but I hate it, but I'm good at it. But I don't want to do that for a living. And I hear people say this, clients say this all the time. "Well, I could do this." Sure, you could. There's a lot of things you could do, right? You could go back to a corporate role somewhere, or you could go back to something that you are competent in. There's a lot of us who are well-educated and have skills, but you've got to take the next step and ask yourself, would I enjoy that? Would I be happy doing that? Because if you don't ask yourself, at least ask yourself that question, you are really shortchanging yourself. Now, I'm not saying that at the complete expense of your financial well-being, you ask the question. I'm not suggesting that. But I think that more often than not, at least in the United States, we've been taught at least those of us who are baby boomers, we were taught you make a living, do something that you're good at so you can make a good living. And if you enjoy it, that's a bonus, but that's not really the expectation. Well, I'm sorry, but we live in a time now where if you're not enjoying it, why are you spending literally 40 to 50% of your waking hours of the better years of your life doing something that you're really not enjoying? Is that what you're here on this earth to do? I'm certainly not. And I really am not here to help other people get that either.
One of the challenges is very often when you suddenly say, I don't want to do this anymore, people will say, oh, you're so good at it. You make so much money at it.
Right.
And I had one gentleman who was an anesthesiologist. Mm-hmm. And he came out of EMT. He was an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
And he got into anesthesiology and he was incredibly unhappy. And I did his Berkman. And one of the things it showed was he really doesn't like take orders from people. He likes lots of variety.
Oh.
He loves being outside.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do as an anesthesiologist? You take orders from doctors.
And you're inside the whole time.
You're inside the whole time in a dark room. And you're doing the same thing over and over for hours after hours after hour.
Yeah.
Duh.
Not a good fit. Yeah. And yet, you know, I think though that many of us, you know, especially in our generation, we were, I think the other thing that really hits people is then when they finally are willing to even admit to themselves that this thing they've invested all these years in this career and in this livelihood, and they realize they don't like it, they feel some sort of sense of obligation, or they feel the weightiness of the responsibilities that they have in their lives, or they're at a loss as to, well, I know I don't like what I'm doing, but I don't know what else I would do. And that's the other big gaping hole. And so that's the piece that where they need to be listening to your podcast, or they need to read my book, or, you know, look for those other resources that are available to them to figure that out. And at least that's how I think you and I are on the same page on that. But I understand how painful that can be when you do hit that realization and you realize I'm sticking with what I know, because, you know, sometimes they say better the devil you know than the devil you don't know, right? But I would say take the risk of at least doing some exploration. No one's telling you to throw your job out the window in the meantime.
Yeah, there's no question. Inertia is a dangerous thing. Ooh. And when you want to make a change that people don't understand, you will get a lot of negative feedback.
Yeah.
So that's where finding people who will support you.
Yes.
And will give you the honest feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I have one testimonial for my online community. I have a gentleman, Greg, who a corporate lawyer for 20 years at the same company. We helped him quit his job.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had the golden handcuffs, but he had two teenagers at home and he realized he worked 80 hours a week and he wasn't able to be in there. He's never going to get back. Having some people to bounce ideas off of, talk with, who are not in who he doesn't work with.
Yeah.
And you need to find that accountability partner or somebody, whether mm-hmm. that's a coach, whether it's a minister, whether it's psychologist, find right. someone who will help you get out of your head, mm-hmm. who will be an impartial third party.
Right, right. Exactly. And I think, though, you bring up another point, or I think this was what you were suggesting, Mark, is that sometimes when you start to make those changes and you're deviating kind of from the norm of what has been that, even if it's a comfort zone of a place that you really don't enjoy that much, when you start to make those changes, there may be other people in your life, you make them uncomfortable because you're rocking the boat. And they have grown accustomed to that norm of a little bit unhappy, but we have enough money, or a little unhappy, but we have the two houses and the nice cars and the whatever, you know? And so it's not, you know, you're affecting other people in that way, and they may not be as supportive either. So you're right. You have to find other people sometimes who are willing to support you and, you know, help you start to think those things through so that you really have the ability to really explore that.
This feeds right into, if you go back and listen, and I'll put it in the a link in the show notes to when I had Michael Clinton, who wrote the book Roar, which he has you go reevaluate a lot of things. And yes, you may very well blow up some things in your life.
You might. Yeah.
Right. The last thing I wanted to talk about is uncertainty is a fact of life. We have lived through 2 years of incredible uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
We are not done yet. I don't know that we'll ever be done yet.
No, we won't, because, you know, pandemic or no pandemic, uncertainty. I mean, the stories I tell in the book were pre-pandemic, 3 stories of people who experienced very life-altering, life-threatening situations, and that changed the way they looked at themselves and looked at their lives. All fortunately moved through those situations in ways that had some good outcomes. I mean, one of them was a situation where a woman lost her husband, but still her story has some positive outcomes as well. But to show the resilience in people and how they come out of these things. And how do you navigate uncertainty? Because it is a fact of life. Those of us who've been around the block a couple of times, we know that every day something could change. We hope things stay somewhat steady in some ways, but that's all the more the reason to make some choices today to go after something that really does feel fulfilling and meaningful and satisfying. Why would you spend one more day doing something that is not that satisfying and not that meaningful to you? Not that you're going to live on edge every day and say, well, who knows, tomorrow could blow up. I'm not saying you want to live that way, but we know that that's a possibility.
It's learning to be adaptable and accepting that you can adapt.
Mm-hmm.
In by preparing for my, I'm doing a career in industry disruption talk, and I talk about the beginning is we've had 3 major disruptions. One, obviously, is the pandemic.
Right.
2 is climate change. And for those of us who lived even from afar through the snowpocalypse of Texas of February of 2021, where I was worried about whether the pipes were going to break in my condo back in Austin. And by the way, the reason why you couldn't get furniture last summer was because almost half the foam plants in the country were in Louisiana and Texas, and they were destroyed by the snowpocalypse.
Wow.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? And no. Now we have this crazy man in Russia, right? Where 50% of all the wheat that's produced in the world comes out of Ukraine and Russia. We are seeing even further supply chain disruptions.
Yes.
I keep on wanting to order this crystal ball off Amazon. And it's always out of stock.
No.
So,
really?
Yeah. So I believe that uncertainty is something that we have to get comfortable with.
Yes. And maybe even embrace in some ways. And I think that, well, Pema Chodron wrote a book called Comfortable with Uncertainty, which embraces some of those Buddhist principles, which is, it can come in very handy when you start to look at things through that lens. And I think, though, that if you've experienced any kind of a very sudden accident, a sudden loss, anything, the 3 stories I have in the book, you know that it does change the way you look at yourself and your life and the people in your life. And it really does bring things into sharper focus. It changes the way you set your priorities. And in some ways, as difficult as the circumstances might be around the uncertainty, it actually does us a service because it cuts away all the nonsense that we worry about. And it helps us to really get clear about what really matters. And I think it gives us a chance to live probably a more authentic life in some ways, and a life where we can be truer to ourselves.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is learning how to deal with risk, understanding what risk is, how do you mitigate that risk? Mm-hmm. I've lived through a number of situations where I thought were very risky. Mm-hmm. When I left IBM, I thought it was very, very risky, and it wasn't risky mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. Versus I went off and had a bike accident. I was going on a bike ride.
Right.
It was mind-blowingly risky.
Right.
I didn't think it was risky.
Right, right, right.
And my wife thought it was risky, but I'm a guy. I was in my mid-40s. I'm invincible. and so, you know, it's one of these deals of learning how to evaluate risk and mm-hmm. be comfortable with it.
You know, it makes me think about something that I think I'm going to be talking about in my next book, because I already have a next book in mind. And that is, I think when it comes to uncertainty and a lot of the things we're talking about here, one thing that's really critical is you have to trust yourself. You have to trust that you are going to make sure that no matter what the circumstances are that you're facing, you're going to do the best you can. You're going to take care of yourself and those you love around you. You're going to try to be the best person you can be under whatever circumstances you're confronting. And if you can hold on to that, you don't have to articulate exactly what that means right now in this moment, but if you can assure yourself that you're going to do the best you can, trust yourself first. What more do you really need?
That's a great place to end this conversation. Tammy, if someone wanted to reach out and contact you and buy your book and listen to your podcast, maybe want to work with you, how might they do that?
Well, the best place they can go is to my website. Everything is there. And I believe I'm the only Tammy Guler Loeb on this earth. I don't know that there is another one. So it's pretty easy to find me. If you just start to type into Google Tammy Guler, Googler, Loeb, Loeb, you will find me.
And we will put a link to your website in the podcast show notes.
Thank you.
And with that, Tammy, as always, I have a great time speaking with you.
This was great. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I had a lot of fun discussing this topic with Tammy. I hope this struck a chord with you and will encourage you to take a step forward to repurposing your career. That step may be small, but forward to a better place. Take a moment, go to careerpivot.com, sign up for the weekly Career Pivot Insights newsletter, which is sent out every Sunday. You'll get a weekly update on this podcast, white papers, and new blog posts. While there, do not forget to check out the Career Pivot community, which can be found at careerpivot.com/community. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Look for Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-264. You can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and lots of other places where podcasts can be found. This podcast can be found on the Repurpose Your Career podcast channel on YouTube. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.